You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, it is my severe misfortune to inform you that there is an election coming up in this country where the pantomime is going to continue to pretend to give us the impression that anything that we say actually has any bearing on the elites whatsoever. But we do have election manifestos. Now, I'm one of those slightly odd people who actually reads them, and I always have since the first general election that I ever sort of took, you know, even vaguely seriously, which was 1997. I got involved in that one and I got all of the manifestos and actually read them, and I've done that ever since. So I thought for this Brokenomics, what we do is we take a look at the manifestos. I don't think we're going to get through all of them in one go, especially since the Labour one I don't think comes out until the end of this week. I mean, you're going to be watching this a week in delay. And on that, actually, I hope that Rishi Sunak hasn't just disappeared into a black hole by then, because all of my gags will be out the window. Whatever I'm going to say about him, I'm sure it'll be hilariously witty. But obviously, Rishi Sunak is cruising towards zero seats. Labour is cruising towards a massive majority. And Lib Dems could actually be the official opposition, so we should have a look at them as well. And Reform are, of course, the big upset who might replace the Tories as a centre-right party. So I think that these things deserve a little bit of looking at. So I'm going to get through the Conservatives one, hopefully get through the Lib Dem one as well. And then next week I'll come back and do the Labour one and the Reform one next week, so we know where we are with these people. Because, of course, you know, elections these days, they tend to run on gaffes and memes and, you know, funny commentary and videos of people sort of fouling up, or Ed Davey falling in the water or at a theme park or whatever it is. But there is actually the notion of some serious policy going on here. So we will take a look at those and see what we make of it. So, right, let's start. I've got on my screen here the Conservative Party 2024 manifesto in full. Now, obviously, the big issue in this election has to be immigration. That's the thing that people are saying in the polling, that for them, immigration is the big issue. So let's find out what the Conservatives have to say on the matter of immigration. So I'm reading from it here. We would extend the visa fee waivers introduced to cover Commonwealth personnel to include their direct dependents. Good. Okay. Right. So by Commonwealth, I mean, what we're really talking about here, of course, is it has always been the case that it is relatively easy for people from the Anglosphere, Australia, New Zealand and Canada, to come here and vice versa, because they're part of the Anglosphere. So, I mean, really, what does he mean by Commonwealth? India, I think, basically is what he's driving at. We're going to make it easier for them to come here and their dependents, so their, you know, the mother-in-law, the children, maybe aunties and uncles, whoever knows. So more Indians is their claim. Could be a vote winner. Let's find out on the day. And there's another section on this. Our United Kingdom is a multi-ethnic, multi-racial, multi-faith success story. Our inclusive Britain plan advances opportunity while tackling unfair ethnic disparity across education, employment, health and justice system. We are seeing some of the most entrenched disparities in our society narrowing. For example, in our justice system and our police force, we now have the highest proportion of ethnic minority officers, judges, magistrates since record began. By God, it makes you proud, doesn't it? Isn't that wonderful? I mean, I don't know about you, dear listener, but I mean, I wake up every morning thinking, if only this was the day that I could be arrested by a man from the Punjab and then hauled up in front of a judge from, you know, Jakarta or something. No, that's in Indonesia, isn't it? But, well, you know, you get my point. Why do the Conservatives think that the ability to be arrested by people born in India and then hauled up in front of judges of people born in India or maybe, you know, second generation, why do they think that's a vote winner? Answers in the comments. Maybe you know. Not immediately obvious to me why people are going to be rushing down on July the 4th to put a cross in the Conservative ballot for that, so you can be woken up at 3 a.m. By the police kicking your door down because you've said something on Twitter that they find disagreeable. Sir, you bloody said on Twitter, we arrest you. You know, maybe that will be a vote winner. We will find out. Okay. What else have they got on immigration? Work with other countries to rewrite asylum treaties. So basically what they're saying there is that they can't find any. We've taken so many people and we kind of want other people to take them, but they don't want to. So we're going to beg them to rewrite their treaties. Look, the way it's supposed to work with asylum is that you stop at the first safe country you come to. Britain is an island in Northern Europe. We are surrounded by safe countries. I mean, even technically France is a safe country. I mean, it's taken so many immigrants that it's not really a safe country anymore. But you get the gist of it. Why do we have any asylum seekers? Any at all? I mean, if there's a major natural disaster in Ireland, fair enough. Okay, I'll give you that one. But there isn't. So why do we have any asylum seekers at all? Just say no. But anyway, the problem with immigration, right, is it's not actually asylum seekers or illegal immigration. It is the 1.4 million legal immigration that we have that they just gave visas to. So anyway, right, fine. Okay, well, we come back to that. I'm sure we'll come up. Right, what else do they say? A regular rhythm of flights to Rwanda every month to remove illegal migrants. Just don't let them in the first place. We have a Royal Navy that can patrol the channel. Just stop it. And if they turn up at an airport, turn them away. If they turn up at any port, just turn them away. If they somehow sneak in the back of a lorry or something, you know, take them to Ascension Island or something, or put them in a camp somewhere, not a hotel. Okay, stop illegal migrants challenging their removal in the courts. Well, look, you've had an 80-seat majority for the last 5 years. You could have passed whatever legislation you wanted. Clear the asylum backlog and end the use of hotels housing asylum seekers. Yeah, you just take a tough line on all of it, obviously. Introduce a legal cap on migration that will be reduced every year. Yes, I remember those. I remember David Cameron being Prime Minister and saying that he was going to limit immigration to the tens of thousands. So, yes, I have complete faith in any Tory promises on immigration. Right. Let Parliament control how many places are offered to asylum seekers. It should be zero. And, okay, fine. So they're trying to make that's their immigration section. They're trying to make it all about illegal migration and asylum seekers. Right, but what about the 4.6 million people that you gave a visa to for legal migration since COVID? Right, 60% of London housing is going to people who are first generation immigrants. So people who were born abroad. 60% of the social housing in London is now for people born abroad who just came here. It's like, okay, well, you can have a house then. What are you going to do about that? Your manifesto doesn't even mention legal migration. The ghettoisation of large parts of the country. So basically, what you're promising me here with your manifesto is we're going to make it easier for Indians to come here and be police officers and judges, and we're going to do some meaningless caps on the tiny bits of migration, such as the illegal migration and the asylum seekers, but not really looking at the massive legal migration problem. So how do I rate this first section? I'm going to go with zero votes, zero seats for that. Okay, fine. Let's move on to economy, because Tories have done an impressively awful job with the economy. So let's have a look at that. Right, take another 2% of national insurance for employees, taking it down to 6%. Okay, right. So national insurance, originally, it was for the transfer programs. So things like pensions and NHS and all that kind of stuff, that was supposed to be funded by national insurance. These days, the big three line items, being NHS, pensions and welfare, all of the taxes, and I mean all of them, not just national insurance, income tax, corporation tax, VA, all of the taxes, right, do not touch the sides when it comes to those big three line items. So not only does all taxation go on those three transfer programs, we then have to borrow on top of it to make up the difference, and then we have to borrow more to do everything else that the government wants to do. So the original reason for having national insurance as opposed to general taxation no longer exists. And what I meant to say when I said original, back in the 80s, the reason why we ramped up the whole national insurance thing is because back in the 80s, old people were poor. So the greatest generation, the GI generation, the people who actually fought in the war, right? That generation, they were very poor. And the boomers, when they were in their ascendancy in the 80s and 90s, when they were, you know, well, I say when they were controlling everything, I mean, they still do control everything. When they first just started controlling everything, old people were synonymous with poor people. You know, if you were old, you were almost certainly poor. And that's why we started raising national insurance, because national insurance is people who paid by people who work, not people who just earn money, i.e. from a pension. Now that the old people are baby boomers and not the greatest generation anymore, or there's increasingly fewer of the silent generation, the ones who came between the greatest generation who've fought in the war and the boomers. Now that the boomers are old, they are richer than everybody else at every income level. So every cohort of boomer at every income strata level is richer than the equivalent strata level of any working age population. So the poorest 10% are richer than the poorest 10% working. The richest 10% not working are richer than the richest 10% working. So why do we still have a tax system that is working off the assumption that old people need special protection because they're poor? Doesn't make any sense. So why, you know, don't dick around with national insurance, just get rid of all of it. Just bin it. Abolish the rate of class 4 national insurance for the self-employed. As I said, just bin it. Guarantee the state pension will not face income tax and the triple lock plus. Okay, again, see my earlier comments. All of this is gold plating boomers. They don't need it. For the reasons I've just explained, they do not need it. I mean, the Tories might need to do this because the only age demographic that is still majority voting Tory is the over 65s. So I get why they're putting this in their manifesto. But this is not the right thing. This should not be their economic policy. Okay. Maintain national living wage. Okay. What they mean by national living wage is basically a minimum wage. And the way that works is not that it makes employers pay people more. What a minimum wage does is it makes it illegal to have a job if your labour is only worth less than whatever the minimum wage is. And if you push minimum wage legislation, which was a Blair era policy, which the Tories at the time opposed, but now they're all for it, all you are doing is making it harder for people with low value wages, you know, what they can contribute, from having a job. So you're stopping young people. So, I mean, I started work, you know, when I think I got a job at Burger King. You know, I got a job at Burger King when I was, what was I? I think you had to be 16 to get a job, and I just lied about my age and said I was 15, when I was 15, and got a job and started working. And it was on a low wage, but it was fine because I was a little kid, and therefore, you know, I was happy to get something rather than nothing. And it was fine. And I learned more about the workplace dynamic than I did than I did at university, which I then went off and did. So, yeah, no, bad idea. Don't like that. Not raise income tax or VAT. Well, yeah, but it doesn't stop you from inventing a whole bunch of other taxes, nor does it stop you from dicking around with the income bands or printing money, which means that you move into higher income bands. So that is completely meaningless. You know, you've been doing this all the time. You haven't raised income tax. You've just raised more people into the bands of which they pay income tax by devaluing their money so that people are worse off. If you were earning 50 grand a year before the pandemic, you now have the spending power of somebody who was earning 40k back then. The inflation is a tax. Oh, right, okay. You know, economy, anyway, I'll just come in. Economy, I'm going to award this the ranking of zero seats. Okay, young people. What's their policy on young people? Ban mobile phones for children in schools. I mean, why can't we just give schools more autonomy to set their own policies on stuff? Mandate 2 hours of PE in every primary and secondary. Yeah, again, why does this need to be government policy? Why can't schools determine this for themselves? Why does everything need to be centralised at Whitehall? Okay, introduce advanced British standards to replace A-levels. Right. So we have persistently devalued the grading system in A-levels, which... And a large part of that was COVID, wasn't it? Because they didn't let anybody into schools, so they had to let the teachers choose the grades that the students were going to get. And I mean, I remember a teacher explained this to me at the time. He was saying, well, when it comes to the exams, I might have 10 students who can get an A, but on the day, the way they perform in that exam is actually only 4 of them get an A. And I don't know in advance which of the ones are going to choke when it comes to the exams and which ones are going to keep a cool head and get the A. So what do I do when it's COVID and I just have to guess who's going to get the A? Do I just randomly select 4 of the 10, or do I just give all 10? So, and that's what they did. They gave all 10. So there's been persistent grade inflation, and with COVID, there was a massive grade inflation because of that. So now you're just going to scrap it and bring something else in. You know, here's a better idea. Just stop doing it and let the free market pop up and offer something and adopt whatever you want to adopt. And if universities or employers can't be satisfied by that, and clearly they're not satisfied by the A-level stuff, well, fine, you just have your own entrance exams. Because, I mean, what does this tell you? Expand academy trusts. Yeah, okay, so that's going against... So my point is they're centralising everything. So academies does give this visage of independence. But everything they do is still dictated from Whitehall. So, look, just don't do that. Create a register of children not in school. Right. Presumably because you then want to move to the Canadian system of banning homeschooling. I mean, why would you need that register? I mean, they're either in households where they're going to fail no matter what because they're extreme low effort. You know, maybe they come from a culture where school doesn't matter, or they're homeschooled. Why are you creating a register? Very suspicious of that. Parents have a right to know what their children are being taught. No. Parents have a right to say what their children are taught. Not that they have a right to know. Oh, for God's sakes. Right. Clear age limit on what children can be taught in sex and relationships. No. Yeah, the clear limit is what the parents say. Obviously. So, I mean, all of this so far is we are going to centralise the bejesus out of everything and then tell you about some of it. Or we're going to give you a little bit of say on it. No, just stop centralising. Let some schools succeed. In fact, better than that, just stop taxing people so much and just have private education. It won't be that expensive. Or if you must have a provision for education, you just give the child the budget and the parents can allocate that budget whenever they want. And if some people want to go to big, successful schools, then they can do that. If somebody wants to set up a micro school that has 15 students or maybe 10 students and one good teacher, if you're getting the allowance for 10 students, that could be enough for a good living and would be motivating for one good teacher to take on a relatively small bunch of children. That would be great. Just free it up. Don't do this top-down Whitehall bollocks. I mean, you're supposed to be conservatives. I mean, what? Well, I mean, I remember, you know, there was rumours of sort of doing stuff like that in the Thatcher years, but it just never went anywhere because they just centralise everything. Okay, all right, okay, what else have they got? Introduce national service. Either 12 months in the military or weekend every month. Okay. What a complete load of bollocks this policy is. So we have run down the military. Nobody wants to join the military anymore because of the woke bullshit. Only a year ago, the British Army was sort of proudly saying that they were on the watch to make sure people who said things like that they're a patriot couldn't join. The RAF was saying that what are they supposed to do with these useless white men who keep applying because they've got diversity targets. They have made it so that nobody wants to join the military anymore. So they're going to try and get through it by national service. By compulsion of getting people onto a national service, and then hopefully a good proportion of them will then go on to become military full time. And then on top of that, for everybody else, we're going to use their slave labour to prop up the NHS. Now, this is a policy, again, look, if you're one of those boomers who comments under my videos and say, I don't believe in that, I get it, not all, hashtag not all. But this is a policy that only polls well with boomers, right? Two-thirds of people are against this policy. And the one-third that is in favour of this policy are heavily, heavily weighted towards the boomers. And I've said this before. If you want to do national service and it's only popular with the boomers, then don't bring in a new national service scheme. Reinstate the old one. The one that disappeared in 1960, and you just say, okay, yeah, we had a bit of a lull, but we're picking up the old policy, and we're going to call up all the people that should have been called up in 1960 that never got called up. So basically, the boomers. Yeah. So start if you want to conscript anyone, conscript the boomers by bringing back the original conscription policy, and you know they're in favour of it. It polls very well with them, so they can do it. But don't. This is just awful. You can't be conscripting people into slave labour. Oh, you have to work for the NHS. What are you going to be doing? Are you going to be delivering medicines to old people? What a crock of shit this is. Goodness sakes. Okay, I better move on, otherwise I'm going to get hung up on this one. 18 new free SEN schools and 60,000 more places for SEN. students. Okay, so that's special educational needs. Okay, fine. I mean, I think that, you know, like I say, that each child should just get a budget, and the parent can do that as they wish. They can go to a micro school, they can go to a good school, they can pick the school basically they want to go to. And yes, it is, if a child has special educational needs, it is more demanding, it's more difficult. So maybe that payment should be higher. And again, you can do this through the free market. But if you are going to have a school system like we have, you need provisions for special educational needs, I get. So I don't particularly hate this bit, but I just think the whole model is wrong. 100,000 more apprenticeships. Yeah, okay. So the issue with apprenticeships, and years ago, my younger brother tried to go on one. Well, he did go on one. He was on this apprenticeship with this plumber guy. Now, the issue was, this guy was a plumber. He wasn't a bureaucrat. And the apprenticeship scheme just kept on shoving paperwork at him. Oh, you need to fill in this report. You need to do this. You need to do that. And it didn't take him long before he was like, yeah, screw this. I'm not doing it. Yeah, I won't do the apprenticeship then, because he's not a bureaucrat. He's not a form filler. So, again, this is not the right approach. If you're going to do an apprenticeship, you know, just let them hire somebody on their own terms, and give them some sort of tax break for doing that, if you must do it this system, as opposed to having free market solutions. So yeah, don't agree with that. So what was that? That was young people. I'm going to award this section 0 seats again. Right, families. Right, what have we got for families? Okay, give working parents 30 hours of free childcare a week between when their child is 9 months old and when they start school. Okay, so introduce a whole load of legislation raising the cost of childcare, and then subsidise the demand for childcare. Okay, what about this? Reduce the tax burden, reduce the size of the state so that more people can have stay-at-home mums or can make similar arrangements. You know, maybe your kid is looked after during the day by one of the neighbourhood women who is staying home and pays a small fee, and that subsidises her to do it. I mean, why does it always need to be strangers? Because we're just trying to shoehorn everyone in work. We're going to take that young mum and we're going to shoehorn her into the workplace. And we're going to take that young mum and make her a childcare person who looks after everybody else's. I mean, just leave people alone and shrink the size of the state and the spending so that people can sort this out for themselves. We're in the weird situation now where every aspect of being old is subsidised through pensions and NHS, you know, bloody bus passes and all the rest of it. But every aspect of raising a family is taxed. And then our politicians scratch their head and say, why are birth rates so low? Well, I mean, yeah, it's obvious, isn't it? Right, so move household income system for child benefits. Okay, so that's, we had this when my kids were little. I was earning a lot and the wife wasn't earning much because she was staying home looking after the children, but we couldn't get child benefit because I was earning a lot, so they're going to move it to a household system, which I wouldn't have got then because the household would still be too high. But there will be people where, you know, the mum is doing a part-time job earning 12,000 and the husband is earning 40,000, and that's probably over the limit, and then the household thing will smooth it out. So again, we shouldn't be doing this whole big tax and spend government, but fine, okay, don't mind that. Deliver a family hub in every local authority. Okay, so what they must be talking about there is pulling together a whole bunch of child services and then having that in one place at your local authority that you can access. And the reason you need that is because there are so many families having kids who struggle with it. Because they are the type of people that struggle with it, as opposed to making it easy for middle-class families to have stay-at-home mums who look after their children, who can figure out a lot of this themselves, or at least know how to use the internet, or form, you know, go to NCT groups where they can rely on each other and stuff like that. So, more herd management there. Okay, Titan How benefits assesses capability for work. You just take benefits away from people if they don't work. When I prefer a system where benefits are actually more generous than they are now, but for a much more limited time. So if you lose your job and it's a shock, the benefits are actually fairly good, but then they start to tail down quite quickly. And after, I don't know, 9 months, there's nothing. Instead of this multi-generational people unemployed, you know, we have in this country families where you've got three generations of people who've never worked. So, that was the disability benefit system. Oh, don't get me started. Right, actually, I bet they got more on that in the healthcare bit, because I do have something to say about that. Benefits in general, yeah. Yeah, you just get, for people who can work, you just get rid of them. Okay. Overhaul the sick note process, taking away power from GPs to write sick notes. No. You scrap the concept entirely. Well, you shouldn't have this at all. What it should be is people go to their employer and they say, I'm sick. And if the employer believes them, then they give them time off. And if the employer doesn't believe them, then they don't. And then you sort of deal that another way. But this whole thing of, oh, we've got to bureaucratize it so that people get a sick note from their bloody, from their doctor. And then the employers can't say anything about it. But even though the doctors just hand them out willy-nilly as soon as you ask for them. Okay. Increased rollout of universal credit. No. Get rid of benefits. We can't afford them. We literally can't afford them. We are borrowing money to give people welfare. Stop it. Right, continue to clamp down on fraud. Yes, you always say that and you never do. And there's always an interesting article in the Daily Mail about how somebody from Albania got 3.4 million. The reason they're able to do that is because we have a benefit system. Get rid of it. And stop importing people who like to take advantage of it. Okay. Introduce tougher sanctions for those who refuse to take up jobs after 12 months of benefits. Yes, by getting rid of benefits. So that was their families section. How do I rate this one? I think I'm going to go 0 seats for this one. Okay, defence. What have we got for defence? Increase defence spending to 2.5% of GDP by 2030. Right. Okay, so defence spending at the moment is about 80 billion. 2.5% of GDP, how much is that going to be? So I think we're spending 2.3% at the moment, so that's going to be another 7 billion. So they want to spend another 7 billion on defence. Okay, don't hate it. I mean, yeah, fine. Have a few more ships, a few more smart boys and girls in uniform. Sounds great. Why not? Do a bit of marching. Hopefully don't ever use them. You know, in foreign wars, just use them to defend Britain, which you're not doing at the moment. You know, put them along the Kent coast with machine guns. Have the boats go up and down the English Channel. See off the fishermen fishing in our waters who aren't British. You know, there's actual defence that you could be doing, not just, you know, going off and backing up in America in whatever war they want to fight now. So, I don't hate it. So, okay, fine. Increase R&D funding to a minimum of 5% of the defence budget. I mean, okay, fine. Don't have a particular problem with that. I mean, most of the defence breakthroughs are not going to come from within the military. They're going to come from private corporations outside. But, okay, yeah, fine, don't hate that one. Guaranteed military support for Ukraine in their war against Russia. How to phrase my response to this one? I'm not a fan. Not a fan of this. policy. So for 10 years before the current conflict, Kiev was randomly bombing the Donbass. They put in place, you know, ridiculous rules about how, you know, the Russian-speaking population, which is predominant in that part of Ukraine, you know, couldn't go to the cinema and watch stuff in Russian. You know, people who only spoke Russian. There was a ridiculous antagonism towards ethnically Russian Ukrainians. And it is not surprising that those people rose up against it. The only surprising thing is how long it took Russia to decide to back them up, which it did. And actually, you hear about Russian soldiers fighting in Ukraine. Most of them are actually Ukrainian, ethnically Russian Ukrainians. I know some people push back on this one because they have the TV version of that war. But as far as I'm concerned, this is a NATO-provoked war. And actually, there's a really good clip from Lindsey Graham, you know, Lady Graham of, what was it, South Carolina? And, you know, in that he's saying that this is a really great war because loads of Russians are dying and we can get our hands on the mineral resources in Ukraine. I mean, ultimately, that's what I think this is all about. There are significant amounts of mineral resources, metals, commodities in Ukraine, that part of Ukraine, and Russia. And the West wants them, and the West does not want to pay full market price for them, especially with all its net zero goals, which means it's going to need a lot more of the commodities that are in these places. That's what I think is driving all of this. I think it's utterly, utterly unconscionable that we have stirred up a war and that whatever it is now, over 100,000 Ukrainians and God knows how many Russians as well on top of that have been killed. And many hundreds of thousands of more have been injured in some way, some quite severely. It's just unconscionable that we are doing this. We should not be doing this. I hate this bit of their manifesto. I am not pleased with it.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
QTS is building more than a data center in Dane County. We're partnering with Alliant Energy to enable 750 megawatts of new renewable energy sources, supporting sustainable generation while lowering costs. We use a closed-loop, water-free cooling system that conserves billions of gallons of water each year. And we're investing millions locally, from scholarships and workforce development to nonprofits and first responders. QTS, powered by people, driven by purpose. Paid for by QTS.